This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 244 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, August 17, 2016. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. Marcus, my main man, what's happening?
Hey, another fine week, another great show. Had a lot of interesting feedback regarding last week's show, which I know we're going to get into in just a little bit, but fantastic guest and an awesome topic this week.
Absolutely. So speaking of last week's show, you and I got a little bit of we got some things off our chest to our buddy and pal, friend of the show, actually, Corey Miller, who helped us through some things, gave us some great advice. And apparently that episode has resonated with a lot of people, and I just wanted to kind of look back at some of the comments we received on the show notes for that post. And Adam Fault says that that episode was awesome, and he says that as a society we need to be more open and honest about mental health issues. And that's something we sort of briefly talked about with Corey, but that's something he's been advocating and doing as much as he can through some of his appearances at WordCamps, sort of spreading that word to say, hey, you know, you're not alone. Let's be more open and honest about this stuff because it's a real issue.
Yeah, Corey would be great to do Skype sessions. You know, you could just call up Corey on Skype for $30 for 10 minutes. Tell him your problems.
It'd probably work. You'd probably make a decent living off of that. And something I kind of wanted you to respond to here on the air is we had a comment by a fellow named Richard Ratman who says, as a freelancer, isn't it a good thing to have 14-hour day projects? Because I know something you briefly talked about in the last episode is you were working on these client projects for so long that it was just wearing you down and you were sort of, you couldn't pick and choose your projects. Or how would you respond to that?
I work on a retainer for all of my clients, so it doesn't really matter. There's no, I mean, there is a set limit, but that gets taken advantage of a lot. And that's just that's sometimes the nature of what you've got to put up with to be a freelancer, is you want that recurring business. You want that recurring retainer. And sometimes it takes 16 hours a day to keep it afloat. And that's the nature of the business.
And last comment I wanted to reference here is by Ann H, who says that there's really good stuff in the episode and, knows that as a remote worker, there are often times where you feel alone and the fear, uncertainty, and doubt starts to creep in. And she also says that you hear these same concerns from startup founders. And as regards to the plugin developer who sent you that very nasty email, she says it sounds like they let their emotions rule, and it could be that they are going through an equally rough time and just took their frustration out in the email. And that's certainly plausible.
Sure. I don't want everybody to dwell on just that thing. That was just kind of like the icing on the cake of that particular day while I was waiting in the clinic, feeling like I was going to drop dead. So that was just kind of the punchline to the story, was hearing, you know, reading that while I was suffering through everything. So, but I agree, it was nasty. And it shouldn't have been said, and, you know, hopefully they have heard this and know who they are and what they did.
And our buddy and pal, Jay Sider, says that he hopes your family keeps well, Marcus, and you get control of your life again.
And, me too.
Our pal down in New Zealand, I believe. So, pleasure to get that kind of feedback. Obviously, it resonated, and we appreciate everybody listening, sharing their experiences and how they felt after listening to the show.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I'm not discouraged. I mean, I'm excited as hell to be speaking here in a couple weeks at WordCamp Los Angeles. By the way, Jeff, do you know where they put me in the schedule?
Before or after lunch?
First session of the first day, right after the keynote.
No pressure. No pressure for a first-time speaker.
No, none whatsoever. So yeah, I've got that to look forward to. That's going to be fun. And, you know, just keep on trucking. That's what you got to do, people.
So, with that said, before we get into our guests and our topic tonight, I wanted to briefly mention that yesterday the release of WordPress 4.6 happened, and this one is named Pepper after the baritone saxophone and clarinet player Pepper Adams. Some of the things that you can look forward to in this release is the Shiny updates, which have been applied even more so to themes and plugins this time around, so it really makes managing them a quicker process. You're not taking to the screen what they like to call the bleak screen of sadness when you click on update, where you get to see the progress, and then you have to click back or it takes you back to the page. It's now a much more streamlined process. I think it's probably one of the big features, the big highlights of this release. Something else is that you may have noticed the fonts or the text in the WordPress backend change on you once you did the update, and that's totally normal. What they ended up doing is deprecating or not using Open Sans, which is a font that they were calling from Google, and now they're using native system fonts, fonts that are already installed on your system or a mobile device, which gives the back WordPress backend a consistent look and feel, but it also increases performance slightly. In fact, just before the show, I was looking up a post that somebody said they've saved 1.5 to 2 seconds on their page load just by using native fonts.
I don't know about that.
Well, they've got the data, and I'll share the data with you after the show.
I'd love to know where they're hosted, frankly, if that makes the difference.
So we'll look into that after the show. Of course, there is the URL syntax checker. So if you click on the insert URL button in a visual editor and you paste in URL and the syntax is incorrect, you'll see this like red dotted outline of the text in the visual editor to let you know that the error or the URL does not work. If you're like me and you like to quickly paste or create URLs by pasting the URL on top of text in a visual editor, those URLs are not checked. It bypasses this check. So there's an improvement for one type of workflow, and the other workflow, not so much. There's also an improved disaster recovery mode where WordPress will try and recover content that's in the browser because it's usually newer than what's saved in an autosave, which occurs every 15 seconds or so. So that's nice. And then there's just a big handful of improvements under the hood, specifically related to developers, WordPress multi-site, and a whole host of other things.
What changed with multi-site?
Let me look here. Stuff. I didn't really cover it in detail. There's improved APIs and performance, and I've actually linked to the post on the make.core WordPress site where they outline that it has a lot to do with like queries and stuff and how you use them. And there's also some new actions, filters, multi-network compatibility, and they also deprecated a few functions as well. So if all that's over your head, I don't blame you. There's a lot of stuff under the hood that's been improved. Like I said, you know, as a user, this isn't a big show-stopping release, but it's kind of on the trend of what we're probably going to see in future versions, major versions of WordPress, where it's just a steady incremental improvement phase, and there's just outside of like when the REST API is actually completed and added or some of the other APIs, it's just going to be steady as you go with WordPress, and I suppose there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I want a showstopper. Come on, we're due.
What would a showstopper? Well, what would your definition be of a showstopper feature in WordPress?
Organizing your media. You got that right. Easier custom post type manipulation. Make it a little bit simpler.
Because before there's still no custom post type UI. You still have to use a plugin to do that.
I know. That's crazy. I would say here's what I'm getting at is more intuitiveness within the customizer, so that if I click a particular area on the page preview, why won't it tell me what that is to edit?
Well, I'm glad you say that, because Western is actually working on something like that right now, like a little plugin for the customizer, and I'm going to actually check it out and look at the progress on that. But it's sort of, I guess when you install it, there's these different areas on the WordPress theme, and if you click them, it will open up the customizer so you can edit that specific part of your theme.
Yeah.
And that's pretty neat.
Okay, bundle all those together, put it out on 4.8, there's your showstopper right there.
Yeah, well, at least with 4.7 coming around, we have, it'll be interesting to see the direction they take with all the talk about learn JavaScript deeply from last year's WordPress State of the Word address. How heavily involved or how heavily run the WordPress default theme is going to be for 2017, if it'll be all JavaScript or what's going to happen there. Who knows? But when we find out, we'll let you know. So without further ado, Marcus,
yes.
We do have a bit of a lengthy bio for our guest here, which we'll get into.
Well, I'm ready.
Let's bring her on. Let's introduce this gal.
All right. Ready? Here we go. Rebecca Gill has a well-rounded business background that began back in 1994 when she graduated from Central Michigan University's School of Accounting. Rebecca's expertise quickly began to develop a much broader scope as she joined Technology Group International as a senior consultant. After leaving TGI, she joined Delphi's Safety and Interior Division as a sales manager and led the pursuit of new business opportunities with the General Motors and Daimler Chrysler companies. I'll fix that bio. In later years, Rebecca rejoined TGI as Vice President of Marketing. In this role, Rebecca greatly expanded TGI's branding and industry presence through the creation and execution of a strategic and highly focused website development and SEO campaign. These efforts brought TGI's lead generation to new levels and helped provide the foundation for 400% sales growth in just 2 years. Unable to quench this desire for technology-based marketing, Rebecca then left. Take this job and shove it. To start her own internet marketing firm in 2009. And now we're pleased to be joined by Rebecca Gill.
That was the funniest intro ever.
Marcus is a funny guy.
Just put that on your demo reel, please.
Oh, funny, funny, funny. Yes, that is a bits and pieces of my background, for sure.
Well, I mean, I could have just read the whole thing, but I'm like, you know, we want to get into some stuff with you. I mean, we'll be... You've accomplished so much in your career.
But that shows you where I grew my roots of SEO and sales and, you know, where I got some experience in the real world before I started helping others do the same.
So we left off at your internet marketing firm in 2009. What's the name of this internet marketing firm and what have you been up to since then?
So in 2009, I founded Web Savvy Marketing and we were doing SEO consulting, which I quickly realized that at the time it was just me, I was a freelancer, and I realized that most website owners did not actually have access to their websites, which is how I got into Joomla and WordPress for website creation, and then I focused quickly on WordPress, and that morphed into custom development and design and theme sales and rounded its way back to SEO with courses and now an in-person event. And I do consulting too. But so I've kind of come full circle with the SEO with a lot of web design in between. And even though lately I've been talking a lot about SEO, the web design and the development is still a large portion of our business and it is the majority of our revenue.
Isn't it interesting that people initially take that fork in the road between Joomla and WordPress? And it's equally as interesting to know that whichever direction they go into, it inevitably either leads them to WordPress or being a diehard Joomla person that gets no work.
Can you imagine if I would have gone the Joomla route? I mean, honestly. And I knew both at the time, but I liked the interface of WordPress better. And I knew the client base I was working with, since I was moving them over to a CMS, would easily adapt WordPress as opposed to Joomla they were struggling with and the modules and things. And then a couple years later, I fell in love with WordPress community.
Yeah, the modules was the killer.
Yeah, no, people didn't get it. real world people just couldn't grasp that, so it had to go.
So one of the main reasons I brought you on the show tonight is I went on Twitter, as I usually do, and I went from brain to Twitter, which is almost always a bad thing. This time I think it was a good thing. And I was thinking about SEO and sort of my thoughts and feelings of it over the years, and realizing that, what had happened was one day I did a Google search for WordPress news and realized WordPress Tavern wasn't even on the first page, which was a shock to me. I thought after all these years that, of course, we would be on the front page. That's all we ever, write about. But Torque News, a newer website and establishment, is the number one result, which shocked me. So I started thinking about, man, maybe all my anti-attitude and resentment against the whole SEO topic in general has really harmed the site over the years. And I was thinking that the psychological aspects of what I've come to know and learn about SEO over the years hasn't been that beneficial. And it's hard to change. It's hard to get over the psychological things that built up inside of me. And so a lot of people got involved with the Twitter thread. You got involved and just started laying down, some facts and some things and some encouragement. And you ended up writing this awesome post on the Web Savvy Marketing blog called Getting Rid of SEO Lies and Other BS You've Heard. And it was a fantastic article. And, but one of the things I wanted to talk about is in the early days when I first got involved in WordPress, I read this ebook that said the first 10 things you have to do after you install WordPress. And they had this section on SEO, and one of them was install the all-in-one SEO plugin. It didn't really tell me how to configure it. It just says install it and activate it. So there is that. And then you had to install the Google XML sitemap plugin because it does all this stuff. I'm like, okay, whatever. And I think I installed one or two other SEO plugins, and then I started writing content because I realized content was king, and I figured, hey, I know search engine spiders crawl for content, but if I write for humans, Google should be smart enough to pick up on that and serve the content to who's looking for it. So that's a big introduction. That's a little bit of my background into how I got involved in SEO. But over the years, from that point on, I started learning more and more about SEO and the nasty tactics and the things that were going on with all these companies and people involved with the black hat stuff that I distanced myself from anything having to do with SEO. I removed all the SEO plugins from the site, and I said, I'm just going to write content for people, and that's as far as I'm going with SEO, and that's what I've done for years. And I brought you on the show tonight to sort of tell me what's changed over the years and maybe get you to teach an old dog new tricks and get me to open up my mind a little bit about it's not just there are good things and good people doing good stuff with SEO these days.
So let me just say what your actual tweet was, because this is what set off my tweet storm.
Okay.
It was, I equate SEO to nasty oil salesmen, slimy tactics that aren't necessary to get results. You can get results without resorting to that. And you can. And you're right. Our industry, at least the SEO portion of my activity, is filled with slimy people. There is no question about it. Every day, every week, I would say, I receive emails from people that say they've been burned by somebody or they're looking to hire me. And one of the first onboarding questions I ask them is, have you hired an SEO consultant in the past, and what did they do? Most of the time, the answer is yes, I've hired somebody, and they'll say I hired like 4 or 5 different people because they keep firing them, and no, I have no idea what they did. They just took my money. That is why you had that opinion, and that is why many people have that opinion about SEO. So that is definitely, what precipitated my rant in the blog, and I usually don't rant, but you were right. We have a bad name. And we deserve to have a bad name because there's a huge portion of us, and by us meaning SEO consultants, that don't know what they're doing or don't do the work that they promise. There are some really good SEO consultants, but they are overshadowed by the ones that are spamming you via email and, taking money and not actually delivering. So I wanted your listeners to know where that came from because you're right, and you were justified in that comment.
So let's start off with A number of things have changed over the years, but maybe you can give us some of the big highlights in terms of, or maybe some trends of how SEO has changed over the years.
Yep. So when I first got into SEO, it was back in, it was 15 years ago. And I did things that the rest of us did. And those, you know, that included things like, you know, hiding text with colors and just spamming or just like filling your page with keywords and, you know, trying to get as many links as you could coming into your site. And I myself got myself booted off of Google, including my corporate site at one time in my life. Yes. And it's a great learning lesson. And it happened early on, and it was just ignorance on my part. I just didn't know what I was doing wrong because we didn't have transparency with Google like we have today. So, you know, that's what SEO was. Today's SEO is different. You know, if you think about, so think about it, approach it this way. What is Google's primary objective? It is to make money. How do they make money? They make money by bringing people to their website and clicking on ads within search. They derive a ton of money that way. How do they do that? With happy users. So they have to use organic search, which is the non-ads, to produce search results that will make users happy, right? So if you consider that in your SEO, and you focus on that as well as some strategy and some process and execution, you're going to excel in today's SEO. If you forget about the user experience and you forget about Google's goal of having good content and search results that clearly match the phrase that someone's searching on, you're going to fail. And there's a lot of things you can do to make sure that you are making the job easier for Google. And people get tripped up on that. You know, Jeff, you had said that you search for Google News, or it's not Google News, WordPress News, and you didn't show up on page one. My first question would be to you, what page on the website is focused on WordPress News? Did you optimize for that? So Google knows that is the specific page it should give in results for it. Well, I looked at what you were talking.
No.
Yeah, I looked up that phrase while you were talking, and it's page one, but it's your homepage. But I guess, you know, there's definitely things that you could probably do to optimize that. But you did what everyone else did. You went into writing content. You know, you were told there were plugins, but plugins are a tool. They're not SEO. They're a tool within the process, and it's way down the process. You got to have strategy and research and planning and then execution, and a plugin is part of that execution. But in the overall scheme of things, it's a small part of the execution. And people, you know, they don't see that. And in today's world in SEO, you have to have that holistic approach, or you're going to fail.
And that's one of the best things about your article I think resonated with a lot of people, is that one of the most popular WordPress plugins out there today is the Yoast SEO plugin. And apparently it has this feature in it called the green light. And, you know, it was kind of fooling people and to say, okay, if I got the green light, everything's kosher. But that's not really exactly how it works.
It's not. And you know what? That's not the fault of the Yoast team. The Yoast team is giving you this plugin to give you guidance, right? And it's giving you guidance at one stage in the process. It can't manage users and what they do elsewhere. But the problem for us in the land of WordPress is that people have this, they want the easy button. You know, remember the big red easy button from like the Office Max commercials?
Yes.
They want that, and they think the Yoast plugin is that. So they install it, they do what Yoast says to get the green light, but that's only like a small, minuscule part of the process. But that's not their fault. That's the user's fault for not looking farther than the plugin and for trying to take an easy way out. And unfortunately, it's the industry's fault because the industry has forced SEO consultants to feel like they're untrustworthy, so people don't want them, and they just opt for the plugin. So it's a vicious circle that we're in.
Wow.
It is. So just to clarify, Yoast, the company creates a great product. Michael Torbert creates a great product with all-in-one SEO. They're both great plugins. I would recommend you to use either one of them, but they are tools in an overall process. They are not SEO on their own.
Yeah, I want to illustrate one other point that you said in terms of rankings and user experience. I used to tell clients all the time, Google doesn't buy anything. People do.
Yes.
And landing pages and the value of the content itself has a lot to do with conversions and the rest of it when you're trying to make, you know, at least organic conversions. But let me ask, in terms of how people are searching these days, what is the best to optimize around just for business? Is it local search? Is it do you have to still stuff your pages with all the city names that you service and all the rest of it?
No.
I'm teasing. What is the best approach for WordPress people to do that? I mean, there's add-ons for Yoast that do that, you know, that claim to do that same kind of thing.
Yeah.
What steps should people take?
There isn't a best approach. There's a process, and that's where everybody trips up. So SEO starts with defining who you sell to, who is coming to your website, who are they, what are their pain points, specifically, you know, what do they struggle with, what is your solution, what does your solution do, and what can they expect from that process, and then from there, you start generating a seed list for keywords. Those keywords should match up to your target demographic and what they need, right, and what you offer them, and who you are, and because that all equates to what they would search for. From that, you look at volumes and your competitors, and you go into site mapping, which maps specific keywords to specific points of destinations on your website or blog. Then you write content. You might have existing content you can optimize. You might need new content. And then you write the content that's really good, and you optimize it for the given keywords, and then you work on off-page optimization, which is bringing in links and social shares and mentions of the URL, which all together creates SEO.
I'm starting to sweat. You're making me sweat with all this work.
It is work, though. That's the thing. So that's like the whole point of my boot camp. I say it's 2 days of intensive because it's work. You're going to work. You're having homework before you come. You're having exercises while you're there. I'm giving you homework at night. And when you leave, you got a whole list of to-dos. It is work. But that work gives you results for 8 years. You can Google certain terms, and you see people I've worked with 10 years ago that are still sitting on page one. It's long-term results, and that's what drives me crazy about pay-per-click. I know pay-per-click works great for people, but it's cocaine for marketers. You spend that money, and it's gone. You spend it for a month, and I've talked – here's two pay-per-click budgets I've taught in the last week. Small business, really small business, $4,000 a month. Mid-market business, $120,000 a month in pay-per-click advertising. I validated that with a third-party site.
Wow.
That's the easy way out, right?
Yeah.
But if you work and you do SEO, you get long-term results, and what you spend today lasts for years if you do it right.
So I was looking at your boot camp, and I ended up downloading you offer a free ebook, sort of an introduction to SEO, and I started looking at all the things you cover or you're going to cover in your boot camp, and I'm like, you know, there's no way. Look at this mountain. This is like Mount Everest. How am I going to climb this?
But it's not. It's not Mount Everest. If you start looking at it in a piece-by-piece basis, it's not a mountain. What it is what you do every day. It's just a different way to look at it.
And that's probably going to be the hardest part for me is changing my habits, changing my ways, my line of thinking. Because I've always said, well, is content still king? I mean, does it still come back to content?
Yes, you can't, period. It's just not going to happen. And if someone comes to me and says, well, I just want you to do everything for me, I'm like, well, I'm not the SEO consultant for you. This is a partnership. You have tasks because you know your website, you know your industry, you know your target market better than anyone else. I can help you succeed, and I can guide you and coach you and optimize with you, but you have to participate.
So looking at WordPress today, I mean, one of its big selling points in the early years, early 2000s, was that out of the box it offered pretty good SEO. Do you think that's still the case today?
Absolutely. I think that there's so much in it that it does better than any other CMS or just HTML websites. I see it every day. You pull up a website, and for example, here's a quick one. You pull up somebody's website, they have four H1 titles, tags on a page. Well, which one does Google choose? It doesn't know, right? That's a simple fix. WordPress alleviates that out of the box, unless a bad theme overrides that, which I do see that all the time. But, I mean, there's a lot that WordPress does out of the box that makes it SEO-friendly. But, again, WordPress is a tool in an overall process.
So how important are sitemaps today? Do they still hold the importance before, and can that particular issue or thing? Can site owners work on that or help the process out by using like the Google Sitemap Generator plugin?
So Google wants you to have two sitemaps. One is an HTML sitemap on your page, or excuse me, on your website that a human can read. That is for the human, and that is for Google. And then Google wants to have an XML sitemap that is connected to your Google Search Console account, which used to be called Webmaster Tools. Both are important. The XML sitemap is more important because that helps Google, and also helps Bing wants it to. It helps them understand the architecture of your website, and it helps them travel through your content, digest it, and put it into their index appropriately. So it is very, very important. And, you know, the tools of the SEO plugin tools we talked about, Yoast or All-in-One SEO, both assist in that, right? They both help create that for you, and they help create it for you in the right manner. They bucket it up by types of content, and they make it easy for Google. So they are very important, and you really need to have it. And it does make a difference because you're making it easy on Google. The more you can make it easy on Google, the better you're off you're going to be.
Marcus?
Is it worth optimizing anything for Yahoo or Bing these days?
So Yahoo doesn't actually have their own search anymore. They pull search from Bing, or at least the last time that I looked, they pull search from Bing. They don't have their own search engine. So do I submit to Yahoo? No. I worry about Bing and Google.
Bing and Google.
And if you're in the Asia-Pacific region, there's other search engines for that area that are very specific, or Russia. So there's international search engines as well. They have their own criteria. For most part, a lot of search engines follow that or have similar things as Google. But when you do get into Asia-Pacific, Yandex has a much different type of rules and criteria that you have to follow. So that is different.
I remember
speaking
back
of
in the
search engine.
Oh, go ahead.
Different search engines. I still see these Fiverr gigs sometimes of people. They'll be like, "Yeah, we can submit you to 200 different search engines."
So funny.
What does that lead to?
It leads Anything? To you getting booted off of Google or putting a penalty. There's no easy button, and every time you try to manipulate the system, you're gonna get whammied. Trust me, because I got whammied, and I learned from it. I mean, thankfully, it was 15 years ago, but, it happened. That's where people get in trouble. They try to manipulate the system. Don't try to manipulate the system. Write good content. Make it easy for the search engines to find it. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, I got booted.
Marcus, can you tell Rebecca's passionate about SEO? I mean, I'm feeling it, baby.
Sorry. Yeah. I am because I saw the results. I mean, there's no way that I could have launched Web Savvy in the middle of a recession, right? Not wanting to be an entrepreneur and to be able to do it and win. There's no way back in my old job I could have competed against SAP and Microsoft and Oracle and me being a one-woman shop, be on page one above them. I could because I did the right thing and I used SEO. And the website still really strong that I worked on for that. It works, and I believe it works, and I really think it's powerful for small businesses if they allocate resources and time to learn it and to do it.
And how often, I mean, have you worked with clients that maybe have a lot of the, I would say, reservations that I've described myself, and they work with you, and then they put in the work and the effort, and their jaws sort of drop when they start seeing the results?
Yes. You know, the funny thing is, and it's not even before they get the results, it's the fact that I take the time to train them, right? So, and we use Basecamp for everything from customer development to SEO. The client has to-dos. Everything's listed out, so there's no confusion, right? And as we go through the process, and Corey Miller said the same thing, as you go through the process with somebody, and instead of just doing for them, you're educating them along the way, and you're empowering them to do things themselves, they come back with such praise and such appreciation because unlike everybody else who's just taken their money and they didn't know what they were doing, you're giving back to them. You're giving them education. It's the teach a man to fish, right? You're allowing them to obtain food from themselves for years to come, and they're so thankful for it because no one ever does it. Everybody wants that monthly retainer in the SEO industry. I don't. I want to educate you. That's why I have a course. That's why I have a boot camp. And that's why if I do an SEO project with somebody, it's all about education. We don't even talk about retainers. If after the project you need me on a retainer, great, I'll help out. But I would much rather educate a client. and have them be empowered to work on their own SEO.
Come on, I can just put together 26 microsites and get the same thing, right?
Oh, that's so cute.
So one of the things back in the day, in my early days of WordPress, used to have, in fact, I think it's still built into WordPress. It uses Ping-O-Matic, and it used to ping all these different websites where it would like tell the search engines, hey, look, I got new content. Come index it really fast. Are those still effective?
Okay, I'm going to answer that with this. I was drinking from my bottle of water when you said Ping-O-Matic, and I just spit it all over my Mac monitor.
Oh, okay.
I do not lie on that.
So the answer is no.
Oh, no. You just, I mean, the XML sitemap is what matters, you know, and if you write good content. So here's something to talk about for your listeners. You know, so years ago, Google put a huge emphasis on inbound links, and other search engines did as well. They got manipulated by really bad SEO consultants, and so they've degraded those, although they're still really powerful. But they've taken some of that power, and they've moved it to URL references that actually don't link. They've, you know, moved it to customer reviews on the internet and social media. So you don't need to chase links. You don't need to do all that craziness. What you need to do is write really good content and interact with your community. I'm here today. I'm interacting with you. What are you going to do? You're going to link back to my site. What does that do? That gives me an inbound link. What does that do for Google? It sees that I'm relevant in the industry and that people want to connect to me and link to me, and it helps my SEO. I know y'all think I'm here for you, but really I'm here for the inbound link.
Well, we're going to put a nofollow on that, so don't worry
about it. Ding, ding. So one other thing I was learning back in the day, I think the last time I checked, ours is 7, but it's this little thing called PageRank. And evidently it has something to do, it's a combination of factors, where inbound links, outbound links, popularity of site, age of the site, there's all these different factors. How important is a site's PageRank today, and should people still be worried about trying to get the highest number?
So, Jeff, if you took my course, this would be a module or a lesson within it, and we would discuss what PageRank is and the fact that it was a good indicator at one point of the value of your site, but that Google actually has taken away our ability to even see it. So it's no longer a value. Is it part of their algorithm? Probably, but it's hidden and none of us can even see it anymore. And it was at that point before they did that, and I give this in the course, I actually use some different WordPress sites, I think, if I recall correctly. Is it a deciding factor? It would be a deciding factor after like a bunch of other factors, right? They would look at PageRank, but it's not anything, you know, what it was. What I would use it for back in the day when you could actually see it was I would look at it to see what Google's view of a specific site was. And by that I mean, was it a 1 or was it a 7? Because that told me a lot. But they only updated it every 6 months. Now we don't even get to see it.
Wow. Okay then. So I'll stop looking it up.
Yeah. No.
Just
no,
the fact that you got a 7, that's pretty good, actually, in terms of rankings.
The last we had, we were a 5, and I was happy with that.
I think a lot of it just has to do with age of the domain and updating it with regular content for the last 6 or 7 years, and not really. Not manipulating any SEO, whether black hat or white hat.
And how many different websites link into you, and what is their authoritative value, right? Because, and that goes to social media too. You know, I mean, if Google looks at who links into you, do they have authority, and it's both within the website and it's now within social media. So when an authoritative user on Twitter follows and reshares and likes and links your content, it makes a difference to the search engines.
Speaking of social media, when I first got into WordPress, I don't think Twitter was around. I know there was Jaiku. I don't want to say I'm aging myself, but I'm thinking back to all these early services and these early friend feed and some of these early social networks. But would you say that this social networking, you know, through the Twitter and the Facebooks has been one of the largest changes in the SEO industry, because now you have to cater to them and optimize for those sites and networks and the people on them as well?
Absolutely. It's really hard to have good organic SEO without social media, because they're considered reference points of data for the search engines. You know, they can't solely work on leads, so they have to use social media. if you are a local company and you're dealing with just a local geographical area and Google can understand the difference, reviews from people within those kind of websites are extremely important. You know, do you have nice, do you have 5 stars in Facebook? Are people saying good things? Are they saying it on Yelp? All of those are taken into the algorithm now, so it is really, really important.
Marcus, got anything?
Yeah, hold on, I got to pull the notes page up. when we talk about when you have someone that wants to check to see how they're doing SEO-wise, how do they do that audit? How do they start?
I have a good example. So this week I received an email from someone who I did an SEO project with. I can't disclose them because I'm under a non-disclosure agreement. But it's a very large website, and as we worked through it, they had gotten a penalty or they've gotten degraded by Google and they lost a ton of their traffic. So through the SEO project of like 3-4 months, we built that back up, and it was fixing the things that they were doing wrong and, you know, kind of educating them on the process. So they built it back up, and they said that they got back all of their traffic from before, right? They got hundreds of thousands of clicks and traffic back up, but they're like, we're really concerned because the one keyword that we really want, these two keywords, we're not on page one. And I looked at it. So I went to Google. I have access to their Google Search Console account, and I went there, and I was looking at their data. Well, Google is giving results for that search phrase with 450 different pages on their website. Which means that it is now combining that what used to be a national search phrase into a local level. So it's pulling all of their local pages that tie to that phrase and using those. So the third-party tool that they were using to judge the fact that they were on page 3 is irrelevant, because in reality, Google does have them on page 1, and it's producing all of their city and state pages to produce that result. So the best place to figure out where you're ranking and how you're doing with Google is Google Search Console. And Bing has a similar account for their webmaster tools. Do not use third party because they cannot figure out the difference, most of them, between national and local searches and the applicable results.
So what if I get an email that says they know the experts at Google and they promise me, they guarantee me or my money back, the number one spot for whatever it is, for whatever industry I'm in.
So here's,
do I bite?
No, here's my response.
Of course not.
So Matt Cutts replied to me in a tweet years ago. In fact, he even looked up my client's site to see what was wrong because there was some issue with Google and it was just a momentary blitz. Bing has tweeted me too. Does that mean I know them? No. Does anyone really know them? Well, they might know the AdWords people that sell them pay-per-click ads, but Google has distanced themselves from the consultants because it needs to be autonomous, right? They need to have that separation to keep them legit. So when someone says that they know Google and they know people within it, it's full of crap. You know, and I would never say that. I would also never say that I can get you on page one because there's so much outside of my control, including the client. The client has to deliver content. The client has to give me information, right? So I can't control that. So if someone promises you to have you on page one in Google within a certain amount of time, it's complete BS. Do not go for it, you know, because you, the client, have to be participative.
I want to bring up another subject within the SEO world. And perhaps you have experience in it, or just at least an opinion, which is reputation management. So all those nasty things that people say about Jeff out there, you know,
really?
Especially if you type his name in and, you know, you get that on page one, there's some complaint somewhere from, I don't know, some site. I'm making this up.
Oh, that's probably true.
Can you, with SEO, get that off of page one?
Here's a great example. If you Google us, mm-hmm. you're going to see a ton of great reviews. And then you're going to see one person on Yelp who gave me a 1 star because they didn't understand the Genesis framework was required for our themes, even though I have it on bold right above the buy button on every single product page.
Okay. Right?
So the only way I can get rid of that is I can't – Yelp, first of all, won't let me take it down. I replied to it to say, it says it right there on the page. We didn't lie to you. It's there and bold, and you have to agree to it before purchase. Yelp won't let me take it down. The only way that you can take it down is to flood the internet with better content to push that down. So do you see it when you Google our name? No. Do you see it when you Google our name with reviews? Yes. It stinks. It sucks. And it makes me angry because I have all this other good reviews and all this other goodness that I do that's not getting represented there. So the only way to really, truly manage the reputation is to flood with good. And then the good pushes the bad down, in my opinion. Now, there's people that manage that process. It's not me. You know, I don't know what they do. I mean, they may contact those sites and they may have some results in taking things down. But, I mean, in all honesty, you have to, if you want that to go away, you have to replace it with goodness.
Or assumed goodness with false sites. With the review and the domain. Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, the search engines are giving preference to those larger sites, and it's LinkedIn and Yelp and Google and Facebook, and for me, like Clarity FM, you know, it's that. So you have to look at those to see what's on page one, you know, and how much authority do they have, and can you take it over?
So we've talked about, I feel like we've covered a lot of things here. One of the interesting things about SEO, and maybe you feel the same way about this, but SEO, it seems like there's so many nuanced things, like so many little tiny details and things you can do, little optimizations that I guess in the end helps generate results.
Yes. So here's what Google's comment is about SEO. And oh, by the way, Jeff, it is in the course that you should take.
I feel like you're giving me homework.
I am, because your view of SEO is old school, and I know that my course or even some other course would help bring you into modern day, and it would teach you so much that you could use in the tavern.
But I don't want to change.
I digress. But anyway, so Google has a PDF that's like the beginner's guide to SEO, and they take you through a lot of things, and that's my basis for SEO, and then I build from that. But one of the things that they say right at the beginning, and they say it within their education information elsewhere for webmasters, is that SEO is incremental. It is making small changes to your website or blog to make it easier for them and to improve your ability to show up in search. It is small incremental changes. So if you think you're going to whip around a magic wand and you're going to have perfect SEO, it's not going to happen. It's work and it's incremental changes. It's a buildup, right? And it's a continuing evolution of your website and your blog, and it's with a focus to do better.
Yeah, and there's not really any such thing as perfect SEO, because once you think you got it, then Google starts messing around with the algorithms and you got to re-optimize.
Absolutely, but guess what the secret is? If you always keep Google in mind and what's good for Google and what's good for your user, you don't get whammied because you're not trying to cheat the system. You're trying to do what's good for the user, which is good for Google and good for the revenue stream, and you stay safe.
And I think that's the point we should hammer home here. And out of all the things we've talked about and all of the work involved, is do-it-yourself SEO possible?
Yes.
Do you even recommend it?
I want people to do-it-yourself SEO. I want you to be empowered. I want you to be able to be educated to control your online destiny. I mean, that is like the premise of everything I do. If I sold, I don't know how many courses and how many sites to my boot camp, and it may not equate to a $20,000 SEO project, but I would much rather have the DIYers buy that and empower themselves with education than get a $20,000 SEO project. And why? Because I'm helping lots more than just that one company. DIY SEO is absolutely possible. It's just a matter of how hard you want to work and if you can change your mindset, Jeff.
So I recently made one of those incremental changes on the Tavern where after 7 or 8 years, ever since I founded the site back in 2009, the site title hasn't had WordPress news in it, you know, for all this time. So we finally changed the title to add WordPress news in there. And I figure sometime by next week I'll be in the first page of results.
And did you update your meta title and meta description?
Because I have no idea.
So here's one perfect thing for you to take away, if nothing else. Your meta title and your meta description are your first opportunity to attract visitors because it shows up in the search engine before they ever click through to your site, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if for example, your homepage, if it is focused for WordPress news, you need to have that in your meta title, and you need to have that in your meta description.
Because so where does somebody find that out of the box with
that
WordPress?
Would be in a WordPress plugin called All-in-One SEO or Yoast.
So out of the gate, off the rack, WordPress can't do any SEO.
It can't. Well, it's just,
no, it can do SEO, but it doesn't offer the ability to change those meta tags out
absolutely
of the box. It's not a setting.
Yes, correct. It's not a setting. I mean, like the Genesis framework has SEO built in, but honestly, you need to trust your plugin to people like the Yoast team or Michael Tolbert because they know SEO, right? And I love StudioPress and I love Genesis, but you know they've got other talents. Let SEO be those two plugins. Don't stray outside of those two. But they let you control that meta title, meta description. And I do not believe that your meta description has WordPress news in it. It has WordPress far away from news, but they are not together. I suspect that your page, when I actually go there for the homepage, also doesn't have WordPress news on it.
And should Jeff also get involved with the Google News feeds, like submitting the news?
Yes.
I think I figured I did that a few. I have to look into that.
I have never seen the tavern come up in my WordPress news feed on my news.
I've only seen it once.
I always get press releases from India.
Isn't that funny? It's just
WordPress
agencies.
PR web.
See, that, so press releases is a great way how SEO has changed in the years. Back in the day when I had my old job and I was a VP of marketing, we would create press releases, and inside the press release, we would have, like I would put ERP software, and the ERP software would link to my page that was focused for ERP software. That was completely authorized by Google. Fine. They embraced it. They you know, you get benefits from doing that. Today, they tell you, no, don't do that. That's considered spam. That's black hat. Don't do that. So there are a lot of things that change over time, and you have to be aware of those, especially when you're doing targeted SEO. The biggest thing that is scary about SEO is when I have someone come to me, they start talking about link juice or something that they've read, and I can tell the blog post is like 5 years old or written by someone who has knowledge 5 years ago, because what that does is they have a little knowledge, and they're dangerous because I have no idea what they've done. Right, because they've taken that little knowledge and they've applied those old school practices to their site, and they don't even know that they're doing damage. You know, so that's a danger. So, I mean, you have to educate yourself.
So, before we wrap up, I wanted to talk about one more thing before we wrap up our interview with you. But we've covered so much about SEO, and the reason I brought you on is because I trust you. I've met you. I think you've got what it takes to change my mind around. I'm gonna, you know, at this time next year, I'm gonna be an SEO consultant. No, probably not. But the tavern, I'm sort of on this quest now to try and get the tavern on the first page of Google for WordPress News. That is my goal, and I think with your help and your course, your ebook, I'm going to be well on my way to doing that. But with all those resources, if someone's interested, because we've mentioned it a number of times, can you give us dates or places where people in our audience, our listeners, can learn more about SEO these days?
So, okay, I'm going to give you two places that are me. And then I'll give you people that I follow. So my reference points are DIYSEOcourses.com, which is my SEO course, which is what I want Jeff to take because I think that it will do him great because it will change his view of SEO and how he looks at the process. Another one is SEObootcamp.com, which is an on-site event that we're doing in January, and it's limited to 40 people, and we're selling tickets already. Jeff, if you'd like to come, you'd be part of a collective of people, so you would learn that way as well. So here are the people that I follow, right, on Twitter. There's a number of people that I really, truly like. So, like, I don't sit and go to all of the websites all the time and look for news and things like that. I follow particular websites and particular people, and that keeps me up to date because they're going to talk about the things that are important. So Rand from Moz, Danny Sullivan, it used to be Matt Cutts from Google, but he's no longer there, which breaks my heart because I had a virtual crush on him. At SEO for Twitter is a great source. So Yoast always gives really good information. Dwayne Forrester used to work at Bing. He now works for Bruce Clay, but he's still a great source of information. Sugar Ray, really funny because her favorite comment that I saw her say on Twitter was, stop worrying about everything with SEO, just write good shit. And it's true. If you just write good things, you know, things will, there's things that will come your way. Gosh, there's more.
What about, you know, keep tabs on Search Engine Land or
Search Engine Land? Yep. I follow Bing. I follow Google. Both of them have blogs that they publish. So our, actually, you know what? Our DIY SEO courses website underneath the resources tab has a feed in from a number of websites. With the most recent articles, it's got conferences, it's got webinars that I'm doing with the iThemes group. So that would be a good source to finding, you know, areas where you can get safe information. And it's really about finding those safe people. So I've done a number of presentations for Corey Miller at iThemes, and we did SEO week, and I'm on SlideShare with those as well. My first presentation, I believe it is, has a list of all of the Twitter people that I follow so that you can grab that. So if you go to SlideShare and you look for Rebecca Gill, you'll see SEO Week. Look at those presentations. That will give you a good group of people that you can follow when it's safe. They'll tell you what's important. They'll tell you what's happening so that you don't need to chase all of the other news. You can just look at that and know what you're getting is quality information, and it's what you need to be aware of.
Now, I'm gonna bring this all back to WordPress land after diving into SEO. But you're one of the organizers. You're helping out with an event called WordCamp Ann Arbor. And you've got this cool, neat little event that's prior. It's a separate event. I think it's the day before WordCamp Ann Arbor. It's called WordPress Warm-Up. And I wanted you to give us some background, some information. What inspired that event and what's that about?
I'm so glad you brought this up because this is a little bit of a passion of mine. So I was at Pressnomics this last year, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but made a comment that I was part of the popular WordPress group, and I was a cool kid, and I was like the A-list, and it's really hard to break into that group. And I kind of looked at him because I don't feel like that, right? I wasn't that in high school. I don't want to be that now. I didn't want to be that then. I don't want to be that now. And because I really enjoy people coming up and meeting me and being able to interact with them at WordCamps. It just enriches me, right? And I didn't want that to be the case. And I said to him, I'm like, if that's the case, if that's what people feel like at WordCamps, we need to change that. We need to have, you know, some type of activity so people who are more introverted can meet other WordPress people.
Like an icebreaker event.
An icebreaker, and feel like they've got a friend when they show up. So we talked about, you know, I don't even remember the group. I think the Bournes were with me, and I don't remember who else. But it really bothered me, and I took that home with me, and it kind of like sat in my heart and my soul, and I was like, okay, I got to fix this. So I'm not a WordCamp Ann Arbor organizer this year. I don't have the time, but I did pitch it to them to say, I want to do this. I want to have an event before it. And I want to be able to have, you know, it can be small, 50 people, but I want to have an opportunity. If people want to do this, I want them to come in. And I'm going to have them, you know, fill out a questionnaire so I can learn a little bit about them and I can help match up other WordPress people and just introduce them and make them feel welcome. And if that means that on the next, you know, when WordCamp starts, I meet them at the door and greet them, I will do that too. But I want them to embrace the WordCamp that I know. I love WordCamps. My first away camp was Las Vegas. Chris Lumma made a big effort to introduce me to everyone he knew, and it really did. It just gave me like a catapult into the community and made me feel welcome, and I want to do that for other people. And Corey Miller is going to be there with me because he's the keynote speaker for WordCamp Ann Arbor. He's a good friend, and I love him to death. And between iThemes and Web Savvy, we're going to sponsor that event, so make sure that people have drinks or whatever they need to feel comfortable. I haven't figured out the rest yet, but I will because I really want it to. I want them to see the WordCamp I know and I love, and I, you know, just enriches me and it propels me forward for the next 3 months. I want that. I want to share that feeling.
I think it's a great idea. And is it sign-ups filled up for it yet?
I honestly don't know. I don't get the sign-up, so I'm not sure. So WordCamp Ann Arbor this year has 400 tickets, and we've sold 100 so far. Which they sell it every year. So I just blogged about it this week on my website so that people and, you know, that follow me locally know about it. I hope we sell out. I hope we have a good attendance. If not, I'm just going to stalk the front door at WordCamp and just introduce myself to everybody as they come.
that's the next best thing.
I mean, if I have to be that, I'll be that. I want people to, you know, I want them to feel comfortable. I mean, I love WordCamps. I mean, I stalked you at WordCamp. I stalked you after WordCamp.
You are a professional. You are a professional stalker. I will give you that.
Right? But it's so that you know that you've got a community that loves you, and I want everyone else to feel that too.
And we wrote about this story, this event on WordPress Tavern, and it was pretty cool to see some of the comments from people that there have been other events kind of like this where there will be a breakfast, a brunch, a get-together, something before the actual WordCamp takes place. And then throughout the event, they're sort of running into each other and exchanging stories, exchanging things they've learned, and they're meeting other people that they've met. So it's pretty cool to kind of see this idea growing and showing up at more camps.
Well, and at WordCamp US, there was a gentleman that follows – I'm not going to mention his name, but he knows who he is. There was a gentleman that follows me on the internet closely, and he's communicated with me. And he came up to me, and he talked to me in person. He's like, oh, it feels like I'm meeting a rock star. And he introduced him to Corey Miller, and he carried Dills, and everybody else was around me. And he came up a couple of times. But, you know, the next day he said to me, he goes, WordCamps are really hard. And I go, why? Why are they hard? And he goes, I'm just an introvert, and I feel like I'm awkward, and I know I'm awkward. And I just looked at him. I'm like, you're doing great. And he was doing great. We all loved him, right? And I enjoyed meeting him in person, and I wanted to talk to him, and I wanted to spend time with him, and I wanted him to know that. And I actually wrote a blog post about it and mentioned him. I think it was in my HeroPress. It was the HeroPress post I wrote. I mentioned him, not by name, but he knew it was him. Right? And I wanted him to know it was him, because I wanted him to know that it was hard for him to come to WordCamp, but he embraced it, and he came up, and he shook hands, and I wanted him to know that we enjoyed it. All of us. You're right? We wanted to meet him, and what he felt, we felt. And if we could just transfer that to other people, it would be great.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I hate that moniker. And people give that to me because I'm a podcaster, and I've met people at WordCamp, and they say that rock star term. I mean, if the podcast last week didn't tell you that, you know, I'm no superhero. I mean, you know, I've got problems like everybody. I've seen even comments in blog posts of people that say, I even considered hiring Marcus Couch, but I know he's too expensive. It's like, where do you get that? Where do you get that? I think the better term instead of rock star or whatever you want to use would be contributor.
Yeah.
He's a big contributor. That would encourage more people to contribute.
I always try to tell people I'm the Brad Paisley song. I'm way cooler on the internet than I actually am in real life.
Yeah.
Right? I think that most of us are. So, you know, I'm careful about what I present on the internet. Do I talk about my down days? No. Do I talk about everything else? No. I don't tell you my struggles. I typically don't. Do I expose my background? Yes, because I think that tells you who I am and it helps you see who I am and that I came from nothing and, you know, I worked hard. But, you know, we don't share that. So it makes it look like we're glorious or we've got these wonderful lives, but we don't. It's the Facebook highlight reels. You know what I mean? We're all normal people and we want to meet everybody else, right? Because that's what our community is about. That's what makes it so special.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff every single day that I'm stumped on in WordPress. Like, how do I do this? And by the end of the day, usually you figure out how to do it. Plug in here, little script.
If I didn't have a team, I'd still be hacking themes and making them, like, just god awful.
Yeah, I'd be FTPing plugins and modding them through the editor.
Hey, look, I don't like that WordPress rockstar either, but I'm not going to complain when fans that listen to us and read our content from Tokyo surround me and take lots of pictures with me.
That's fine.
But you be acknowledge the peacock, you, Jeff. You be the peacock.
Acknowledge it as you're a contributor. That's what it is.
Right.
You know, we're contributors in some sense. I cannot code. I cannot make stuff in core, but I can do this.
Yeah, if there's one aspect of me that if there's one skill I have that I excel at, humility. I'm very humble. At least I think so. So before we wrap it up with Rebecca here, I want to know, I'm going to give you the opportunity to give a shout out to your besties or bestie, but I figured you probably have more than one.
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, who do you want to say a shout out to? I'll give you an opportunity. Like, this is a radio program.
Oh gosh.
So you had my bestie on just recently. You were with him, Corey Miller, who I love to death, and Carrie Dills is always my bestie, which, you know, she's tied at my hip at camps because we're fun together. Those would be my two besties, I guess I would tell you.
That's the two I had in my mind, so I'm glad you confirmed that. So how can people keep in touch with you, follow your work, and get in touch with you if they're interested to learn more about SEO, the services that you provide through Web Savvy Marketing?
So the easiest way to find my links is RebeccaGill.com. It has links to all the different areas of me, my resume, and things like that. Kind of boring, but Twitter, I'm Rebecca Gill, and the company that I founded is Web Savvy Marketing. My courses are at DIYSEOcourses.com, and our upcoming event, which is open for registration, is SEObootcamp.com.
Awesome. We'll have links to those in the show notes. Rebecca, thanks a lot for spending some of your valuable time and insight in SEO and sort of really inspiring me to learn more about it and change my ways. And maybe I should make an apology for telling so many people over the years who don't know as much as me that SEO is just you want to stay away from it, and maybe that's why there's so many people who don't want to deal with consultants now.
Oh,
it's all my fault.
It's not your fault. It's good. You just need to educate yourself and empower yourself.
That's right, and I'm going to work on doing that with materials provided by you. So, Marcus, anything, any final questions before we let Rebecca go for the night?
No, it's always a fascinating topic as far as SEO goes. It will never end as long as search engines are prominent in our lives until Apple just tells us what we should look at. But so I'm very happy to have you on and talk about the relevance of SEO and some of the do's and don'ts, and hopefully we'll have you back on again soon.
Thanks so much, gentlemen. Appreciate letting me come on.
Not a problem. So I hope everybody out there enjoyed the show, and we didn't get into it last week, but I see Marcus is going to get back into the swing of things here this week. And what do you have for us regarding plugin picks of the week?
Oh, I've got three really good ones. First one on deck here is Login Watchdog, and what it does is it monitors failed login attempts, and in any case where it exceeds the amount that you've put in your settings, it actually automatically blocks that IP address forever, or at least in the settings. It's called Login Watchdog, pretty neat plugin. Those of you out there who use Freshdesk for your customer ticket support ticket management system, I've got some news for you. There's a new plugin called WP Freshdesk, and it lets you connect your WordPress site with your Freshdesk account. And the neat thing is it provides a single sign-on to be configured between WordPress and Freshdesk, so that once you're logged into the WordPress site, you don't have to re-log into Freshdesk. And it allows you to actually put the support tickets within the dashboard as well. So that's really nice if you want to just take a look at that and not have to log back into Freshdesk all the time to see if you've got some support problems. And finally, Jeff, have you ever in the history of the tavern accidentally published something? Accidentally hit that publish button?
When
you
didn't need to? Yes.
Okay. Well, you may be a good candidate for this plugin. It's called Post Lock, and it prevents accidental updating or publishing of content by requiring a password for you to do it. Now, here's how it works. It's right next to either the publish or the login button. There's a little padlock, and you have to click the padlock, and it opens up, and it says, type in XZ2942 into this box. And once you do, the padlock opens, and then you can hit update or publish. So it's just that extra step so that you don't accidentally hit it and make it go live. It's called Post Lock, and those three are my plugin picks of the week.
Well, great to have you back on. This is a fun-filled, positive, reinforced energy episode, and we're going to do it again next Wednesday evening. So you can find show notes for this episode and every other episode on WPTavern.com, and you can follow me on Twitter if you should desire at Jeffro, JeffrO0. And Marcus?
You can find me at MarcusCouch.com, MembershipCoach.com, and on Twitter at MarcusCouch.
And until next week, everybody, have a safe, enjoyable rest of the week. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday evening.